Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the path to self-leadership mastery and life success. Redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. I call this dual innovation leadership. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and effectively. Discover something new from our meaningful conversation today. Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. In episode 385, we will discuss what we need to know about forensic psychiatry with Dr. Mark Levy, part 4. Dr. Mark Levy has strong feelings about Donald Trump. We start with the May 30th verdict in the New York versus Donald Trump case. When we first discussed the case, we were in the middle of the trial. Donald Trump was found guilty on 34 counts of falsifying business records to cover up a sordid extramarital affair before the 2016 presidential election. A lot has happened since then. But with Dr. Levy, we discuss his perspective of Trump's behavior, the verdict, psychological testing, the National Republican Party, discernment, and protecting our psyches before and after the November 5th, 2024 presidential election. But before we start our discussion, today's sponsor is Midwest Bakery, and I'm excited to tell you about their delicious, all-natural halal bread. I'm so jazzed about their bread products that I'm helping them grow their bakery. They follow the Muslim definition of halal, ensuring their bread and hoagie rolls use only permissible ingredients. Check out MidwestBakeryHalal.com, that's H-A-L-A-L, to find a store near you. Remember, you don't need to be Muslim to enjoy their food. If they're not in a grocer near you, talk to the store director and request it. After all, grocers want to stock products that you love to eat. Now, without further ado, please listen in to Dr. Mark Levy. He has some beneficial things that will help you get through this election season. As if we're not talking about him enough, thank you for another conversation, Dr. Levy. You have given me permission to call you Mark. Yes. So tell us why it's important for you to be talking about this case.
I want to be very clear that I am not an expert in political science. I'm certainly not a politician. And this involves the central political issues of our moment in time and in history. And I don't think that's being too grandiose, because it appears that the future of American democracy is really on the line in the next election. I can't also shed the fact that I have a lot of psychological perspective, and the centerpiece of what's going on is one individual, Donald Trump. It doesn't mean that he came de novo out of the thin air. He's the product of decades of leading up to a Donald Trump. It also doesn't mean that he isn't now the leader of a movement of tens of millions of Americans. That's why this is not just one politician spouting ideas in a vacuum. This is a major force in our country because his ideas have taken hold in a large, very large minority of our population. And that's something I know about, ideas taking hold in people's minds. And I'm deeply troubled by what is going on at the moment. And particularly, Donald Trump is a liar. That's not a medical diagnosis. That's a provable fact. He's lied thousands, if not tens of thousands of times. And those are lies that can be proven as lies. It starts in 2011 when he said that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States. He was born in Nigeria. And he was a birth denier. And therefore, the importance of that is that Barack Obama was not legally entitled to be president because he was foreign born. But that was a lie. And there have been virtually every time he speaks, what he says is laced with lies, not nuance, provable factual lies. So that's a big problem. However, it's not a new problem, at least as recently as 90 years ago. Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi propagandist, spoke openly about the art of the big lie. And that is, the more you tell it, the more you insist on its truth, the more people believe it's true. And you also normalize what would be morally, ethically anathema to people by declaring it as just part of the natural universe. And Goebbels was very successful in corrupting the morality of the German population. This is not different, and nor is it hyperbole to say that this is exactly what Donald Trump has achieved. What has he corrupted? He's corrupted an entire political party, where the thinking people have left, and the people who remain are a mini-me's. I think seven of them showed up at his trial in blue suits and red ties, looking just like Donald Trump dresses at his rallies. And he ran for president of the United States in 2020 without the Republican Party having a platform, without it saying, this is what we want to do for the country. It was Donald Trump was the platform. It was the cult of the individual. And this is no different than any other dictatorship historically. Mussolini, Hitler, Putin, North Korea, you name it. It's a cult of personality. It's the great leader. Now, why would people go along with this? Why would people, and we do, that's the tragedy, we do. Why do we as human beings have the capacity to surrender our independent judgment and follow whatever a leader tells us is reality? Even if you have to deny your lying eyes, that means you see it isn't reality, but you go along with it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this, there are different reasons, because obviously it would be not only wrong, but tremendously insulting to say everybody who in the nation is willing to vote for Donald Trump is an ignoramus. That's not true. There are many educated people, many highly experienced politicians, and many, many, not many in terms of numbers, but a significant number of super successful Wall Street executives are willing to go along with voting and supporting and sending money to support the campaign of Donald Trump.
Shocking amounts.
I think that has to do with something as simple as perceived, I think very wrongly perceived, self-interest. It's transactional. Donald Trump and his whole family exemplify transaction. That is, if there's nothing in it for me, I'm not interested. Why else was Ivanka and Jared not present in the courtroom? In criminal trials, family are always present there. Ivanka is his chosen child. Puts her into his administration. She doesn't show up. How come? There was nothing in it for her. And right now she's trying to rehab her persona from what being tarnished by the administration of her father. So she doesn't show up. It's not about love. It's not about what's our relationship. It's about what's in it for me. And we all have that capacity. So if I am the president of a big bank and I say I'm going to support Donald Trump, and I'm getting paid $18, $20 million a year, I'm making a bet that I'll have lower taxes if Donald Trump is elected. It's exceedingly short-sighted, and it amazes me that people as accomplished and smart as my hypothetical bank president would not see the larger picture, which is, and exactly what do you think your life will be like in a dictatorship? After all, this man says, I'm going to be a dictator. He always says what he's going to do. So you have to listen to what he says. Why is someone who's supporting him unwilling to consider the larger picture? Well, I think you have to sort of segment this because there are people in all walks of life, but starting with where I just started, in a sense, the most shocking financial leaders in the country who support him, not all do, obviously, they're thinking, this is a man who's for sale. I can buy access to him. He's proven that. He sold influence when he was president. If you wanted to have access to him, you stay in his hotel if you're a foreign diplomat. That makes it easier for you. So he gets paid, and his whole life has been financial and power transactions. They don't have respect for him, but they know he's purchasable. And if you're a master of the universe, if that's your mindset, you know, after all, I make all this money and I head this enormously powerful enterprise. That's the mindset of, yeah, access to the president. He'll owe me a favor. And there'll come a time when I'll call upon him in true mob spirit. So that's one group. There are other people who have been raised often in fundamentalist religious beliefs, where authority is the most important issue, usually paternalistic authority, and you follow what the father says you should do.
Oh, sure. Yes.
And you don't rebel and you don't criticize that. And you were never taught and you were never rewarded for independent thinking. You know, we have I think, in our public school system, a deficiency of teaching of how to think independently. So rather than go against the tide, you go with the tide, and that's your community. This is not limited to any one religion. This isn't just Christian fundamentalists, even though they talk about the Christian right. There are extremely religious Orthodox Jews who think similarly. You follow the authority and the rule, and they support Donald Trump. And fundamentalism in general is a submission process to an authority rather than independent thinking. We have a country that was in part built upon religious refugees, and we have this underbelly in our country. Then there's also the grievance contingent, I'll call them. A lot of that is the South, those in the South who have not evolved, who are still hanging on to a sentimental attachment to the Civil War and are aggrieved about the raw deal that they feel the South got as a result of the Civil War. Wow. And here you have Penn running for office saying, I am your redemption. Fill in the blank. What do you want to be redeemed for? You're a white nationalist. You want to be redeemed for the changing complexion of our society? I'm your guy. Or whatever it is.
Yeah, or now that he's a criminal, he's appeasing the...
Right, he's appealing to criminals now. He already did before he was convicted, saying that the 1,000 people convicted of storming the Capitol, assaulting police officers who were convicted by juries of their peers or pled guilty are not really convicts. They're hostages, and they should be pardoned by him in the same way that he pardoned all of his other mob cronies, Roger Stone, Manafort, etc. He has an unbelievable number of associates from one term in office who were convicted of felonies. Michael Flynn, it's a historic fact so many people who surrounded him, Manafort, Bannon, they're all convicts. This is what mob looks like. And it's so interesting that Donald Trump is convicted truly from a jury of his peers chosen by both sides' lawyers. His lawyers had every bit as much influence over the jury selection as did the prosecution. But they're New Yorkers. They've known Donald Trump since he was a kid in Queens who punched out one of his teachers. That's how well Donald Trump is known in New York. And New York has never liked Donald Trump. He was a joke, but also a scoundrel because he's a grifter. He would routinely not pay people who were working on constructing his buildings and say, go sue me. And he had over 3,300 lawsuits, quite apart from his six bankruptcies. He had over 3,300 lawsuits. Why is this relevant? The database is huge of negative things about Donald Trump. It's relevant because he is dismantling our, this is, comes back to forensic psychiatry, our rule of law. And without rule of law, you have no democracy. It is the foundational component of a democracy. And he's saying it's all rigged. It's not, it's corrupt. And in the spirit of true paranoia, he projects. Why do I say paranoia? The paranoid individual says, it's not me who wants to kill you, it's you who wants to kill me. And Donald Trump is a bigger projector than a movie theater has, because he calls the Biden crime family, you know, look at his family, you know. He says, weaponizing the Department of Justice. Joe Biden is not controlling Donald Trump's conviction in a New York State and New York City courtroom. That's not under the DOJ, which is part of Joe Biden's administration. So it's structurally impossible. Secondarily, Joe Biden is allowing a senator in this very thin majority, who's Democratic, if he controlled prosecution, to be tried for felonies of his own corruption, that's Senator Menendez, and a senator, a congressman from Texas who's a Democrat, and his own only surviving son. And not only is he, has he said he would not pardon his son if he's convicted by a federal jury, he retained the Trump-appointed federal prosecutor who is prosecuting his son. So if Biden had weaponized the Justice Department, none of these things would be happening. But now listen to Donald Trump. He's going to put in front, in the Justice Department, people who are his yes men, so that he can lock up Hillary Clinton, so he can prosecute Joe Biden. Doesn't matter that there's no criminal facts. He will, like any dictator, just use this power that he has, and it's enormous in the White House, to undermine the rule of law, which means the rule of law means you're tried by a jury of your peers. The facts are weighed. If you've committed a crime, you're punished for that. And if you haven't, you're exonerated. That's the way it works. But that's not what he's looking to do. He's looking to set up a corrupt system. All the power is concentrated in the White House. So the fact that Donald Trump is a fundamental threat to our rule of law, mostly to save his own skin, because he's got over 90 indictments against him now. And right. If he is elected, he can get rid of all the federal prosecution with his corrupt Justice Department. He will have all those cases dismissed. That's the hallmark of a dictator. It's his own self-interest that drives him, not what's good for the country, not what's good for Americans, not what Americans' needs are, what Donald Trump's needs are. And finally, and then I'll listen to your next question. I have to walk a fine line because I've never examined Donald Trump, so I cannot make a clinical diagnosis about him. But he clearly exhibits extreme narcissism. And narcissism is a spectrum. We all have healthy narcissism in the sense that if we have kids, we feel good when our kids succeed. And that's a narcissistic gratification for us. At the other extreme are malignant narcissists. And Osama bin Laden was a malignant narcissist. And so are most of the dictators, if not all of them, in history. And Donald Trump is a malignant.
Why wasn't Osama bin Laden a sociopath?
Well,
I mean, isn't that on the range of narcissism?
Yeah. Sociopathy, and it may be that Donald Trump is, but again, I can't make a clinical diagnosis as a clinician. Sociopathy includes considerable dose of narcissism. So these are not separate. Overlapping, more like a Venn diagram. But beyond that, there's malignant narcissism, which is for one's own sense of empowerment, aggrandizement, and satisfaction, you commit acts that are highly destructive of other people with no empathy. That's the other essential ingredient in sociopathy or psychopathy, is the absence of empathy. There is no empathy. That's why Donald Trump could say to General Kelly, his chief of staff, whose son died in Afghanistan or Iraq, he wasn't going to go to the commemoration of, we just had it again, we had the 80th anniversary of
D-Day.
Yeah. He wasn't going to go visit the cemetery because it was raining, and then says, and Kelly writes this in his book, why would anyone sacrifice their lives for this? They're losers. He has no capacity to understand there are things beyond transactions that have perhaps the greatest value to human beings when you're willing to do something for a larger good or for others, not just yourself. It's like asking him to address the Italian parliament in Italian, and he doesn't speak Italian. He just doesn't have this component of himself. And that too, I mean, how can you be the leader of the United States, not to mention the Western world, and not be able to empathize with other people's needs? It's just such a complete conflict of what's required.
For those of us who see him clearly, what can we do?
First of all, I don't have the answer, and it's obviously difficult because a lot of people have been laboring about this. How do you talk to your neighbors, your family, who have this other Earth 2 worldview? I think in general, as a shrink, you have to listen, even though it may be nauseating to hear what's being said. But the person you're trying to influence has to feel that you're hearing them, even if you disagree. That's the first step. Shaming somebody is a pointless endeavor, and it will make them even more emphatic in their beliefs than they start out. I think then, because I have faith in education, that you have to kind of break this down. Well, he's a great businessman, and we need a good businessman as a leader. Oh, really? What do you know about his business practices? Was 6 bankruptcies evidence of being a great businessman? Was his claim, his lie that he self-made, he took a loan for $100,000 from his father that he paid him back, evidence of being a great businessman, since his father gave him probably $100 million that he kept bailing him out? In fact, his whole life has been one of being bailed out by others. Does a great businessman not pay their carpenters, their plasterers, their bricklayers, and say, go sue me? Is that being a great businessman? Would you like that if you were their carpenter or bricklayer, to be told, go sue me? I'm only paying you 20% of what I owe you because I can. Just kind of break that down and say, you have strong moral beliefs. You believe in the Ten Commandments. You know, you believe in honesty. You believe in fidelity. Where has Donald Trump exhibited any of those qualities? So why do you think he's morally acceptable to you? And then you'll get stuff like the propaganda machine's product that Joe Biden is a criminal. And you have to then dig down, well, what has he done that's criminal? What has he done that's been helpful to the population of our country, that's tried to meet people's needs, people on strike, supporting them, getting reduced drug costs, et cetera? I think it's a one-by-one process. It feels overwhelming and it feels depressing because we all feel helpless. And how do you combat this sort of thought control that has occurred?
Yeah, because we're experiencing PTSD from the shock of, right, 2016.
We're all traumatized, but also we're all insidiously normalizing the breaking of norms that Donald Trump's entire lifetime has exemplified, but political career has brought into all of our lives. And, you know, his normalizing what should never be normalized, when you have the Charlotte demonstrators saying Jews shall not replace us, carrying torches like Ku Klux Klan. And Donald Trump says there are good people on both sides. That normalizing is insidious and affects all of us, whether we want to be or not. And, and just his behavior, just his flaunting defiance of norms that have been important in holding our society together, that becomes a new way of being, so that you have Marjorie Taylor Greene in the State of the Union, you know, now yelling out liar and all kinds of inappropriate behavior in the State of the Union in Congress, is now okay. When one does organizational psychiatry consulting, it's very, very important to understand the CEO's behavior because it filters down. If you have a paranoid CEO, the entire organization is looking over its shoulder and is afraid and is worried about what someone is thinking about doing to them. And in contrast, to take the other end of the spectrum, if you have a leader who empowers people and values and respects them and makes them feel recognized, you have an organization that just hums, you know, it just produces at every best, and everyone feels like a stakeholder in it. Those are the extremes. So when you have a proponent of grievance and anger, but grievance in particular, at the helm, even if people felt a little aggrieved about their situation and what they imagine the benefits are that, I don't know, Latin Americans are getting when they come across the border, a free lunch, you know, which is anything but the truth, but that's what they imagine. It gets fanned, just like the racism that's been the underbelly of our country since its inception gets permitted to come out instead of keeping it underground, where at least it should be, if not ultimately there is some reckoning. You know, one of the problems historically, I think in our country, is that we've never come to terms with our history of racial violence and slavery, whereas other societies like Germany confronted its history. South Africa confronted its history. It's not perfect, but it's the beginning of people coming to terms. But what you have is the generations later of the Civil War participants in the South feeling that they got a raw deal, and, you know, and that they've never been treated right. There's no recognition of the fact that what that fight was about ultimately was about slavery, about enslaving people.
Yeah.
It wasn't about states' rights, as is often the rehabbed version in the South. It was about enslaving human beings.
Well, that's what I'm encouraged about in Minnesota, is our Governor Tim Walz has met with all the Native American tribes in the state, yes. Which has never been done.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, this needs to be publicized. The nation needs to learn about this. It's almost a model for
yes.
American reconciliation with its history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'll put in the show notes some more information about that.
Okay.
And the link, because there's a lot of money that's put in the Midwest to kind of go through this reckoning and resolve of our past.
That's the only way to do it. And it's fantastic that Minnesota is doing that. I mean, I think that, you know, maybe some national news shows should be informed so they would do a special on it. Maybe CNN would do something on it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I had not heard anything about this.
We need more experiences where, like, you know, we feel like our state and our country are on the right track.
Right.
And we only get there with programs that are being highlighted in what they're doing. So it builds back this hope.
All of us except Native Americans were descendants of immigrants or slaves. That's the entire population except Native Americans. What is this? They're not sending us their best. They're sending us rapists and drug lords, etc. Anti-immigrant. Because the what made America great, not in the MAGA sense, but in the true sense, is immigrants. That's
yes.
Why this country, people had to risk their lives to get here. That should be celebrated all the time and not denigrate.
Right. Yeah, and we should be hearing those stories to counteract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if
yeah.
we think about, like, you know, what would be some ways that we could be empowering? I mean, if we're leaders, right. we like taking initiative of things and collecting more positive stories to counter all the negativity. But why?
I agree with that. I think that's excellent. It's just trumpeting the immigrant stories that made America great.
Yeah.
And if allowed to, will continue to make America great.
Right. The allowing part. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I was going to say something else just about some ideas of how we can go forward because we are experiencing a lot of trauma. Oh, we talked last time, a couple conversations ago about Mary L. Trump's book.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Too Much and Never Enough.
Yes,
and I was looking like all over for it and I couldn't find it. So I ordered another copy. And in my research process, Mary L. Trump has come out with another book called The Reckoning.
Yes, I want to read that. I haven't yet.
Okay.
Have you read it?
Yeah, well, I just got it on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like on page 60 and she goes through our history, our nation's trauma and finding a way to heal because she's a trauma specialist, which yes. I had put together until I started reading this book. I'm like, oh, of course, she's got a lot of insights and she goes back to our founding and presidents. There's this huge contradiction that we have in like how we're leading and our ethical behavior and yeah. how we justify doing mm-hmm. horrific things. And it's back to our founding and mm-hmm. our forefathers and, you know, mm-hmm. slavery, who had mm-hmm. slaves, which presidents mm-hmm. had slaves or mm-hmm. Jefferson, you know, denigrating mm-hmm. interracial relationships.
A little hypocritical.
Yes.
Yeah. That's echoed today with Clarence Thomas, not just with Roe v. Wade taking away rights, but saying that the 14th Amendment, an interpretation of the 14th Amendment is the basis for a whole series of laws that extended rights. Roe v. Wade, gay marriage, and Loving v. Virginia, which allowed interracial marriage. That was a Supreme Court decision that Clarence Thomas has benefited from, comes out of the same 14th Amendment equal opportunity provisions. The 14th Amendment comes out of the Civil War and Reconstruction. That's a whole other thing. But
yeah.
Clarence Thomas now wants to go after contraception and gay marriage. What about Loving v. Virginia? You're going to be separated from your wife, Virginia?
It's so much irony.
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy is just rich.
Yeah.
I'm going to read that book. She comes to being a, I didn't know she was a trauma specialist, but she comes to that quite honestly because her father was basically driven to alcoholic suicide by her grandfather, who she calls a sociopath. I mean, she knew him. I don't. But Donald Trump learned it in the bosom of his family, seeing his oldest brother, who had his father's namesake, driven to drinking himself to death. Mm-hmm. And became the mini-me of Fred Trump, his father, who, according to Mary L. Trump, was a very corrupt, cruel, and empathy-lacking man.
Yeah, everyone should read the book because it has our history and you can see the degree of hypocrisy in it all. She also, after Donald Trump was elected, she ended up going to a treatment center because she was so traumatized. Hearing his name all the time, she just couldn't believe it, right?
Yeah.
Just like all of us, we were just all in shock regarding it. And so she was saying in her treatment program that she just would use her first name. And if asked, I mean, she would just say that she wasn't related to Trump. And then the moment that she gets out, she's at the airport and every screen has Trump's picture on it. You know, it's like there's no way she can get away from it.
I'm going to read that. That's thank you for the recommendation.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And she talks, too, about the normalizing of his behavior and the foundation of where that happened. Yeah, it's an important read for our society.
Well, I found her first book, Too Much and Never Enough. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Too Much and Never Enough.
Yeah, The Making of the Most Dangerous Man.
How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. I mean, and it's like a precursor, right, to what we're experiencing.
Yes, from a psychodynamic point of view, it is such an inside blueprint of the genesis, the creation of this man who is now the plague of so much of us. And he's actually a threat to the world because he wants to dismantle NATO, basically embraces Putin. And if one just thinks that through a few steps, this is why I can't understand how leading Wall Street figures can support him. There'll be economic chaos if you basically destroy the economic and military significance of Europe and the European alliance and allow two dictatorships, China and Russia, to basically increasingly control the economic transactions of a global economy. It'll be chaos. It's very odd to me that people don't see this or...
Well, if we look back at our history with investors, I mean, they're always capitalizing and exploiting the financial opportunities. And that's what led to the housing implosion.
Right. Right. You know, it's very short-sighted. Take advantage now. It's transactional.
Yeah, very much. And that's why...
What's in it for me right now?
Well, and that's why it's so dangerous.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and that's why we're so scared. I don't know if it's scared. I mean, I just feel empowered to do what I can, but maybe it's because I'm meditating a lot and doing a lot of yoga.
Your podcast is an effort to reach people. And it's depressing when you don't, and you feel helpless when you don't do anything. When you get involved, you know, whether it's addressing postcards or talking to, you know, the uncle who's on the other side, you begin to feel less helpless and less afraid than when you just sit there and feel overwhelmed by what you're observing.
And I also strongly recommend people to do metta meditations, you know, sending goodness all around the world and mm-hmm. to start with yourself and then reaching out. But it puts you in a really a great mindset, but it makes you, you know, like if you have estranged relationships, I do this all the time. Like if you, you know, are a person that likes to do what they can to improve a relationship, but mm-hmm. you know, when there's narcissistic abuse involved, mm-hmm. you know, you end up in the same place all the time. They don't change. And that's what we're seeing. This person that, you know, who even is above the law. I mean, who else? Skip back to meditation in a minute, but who else would have 34 counts, you know, all this legal stuff and still be wanting to show their face?
Yes, with no shame.
No shame. There's no shame.
Because he can rationalize that this is all persecution. That because who would persecute him? The corrupt other, the weaponized, the guy who's weaponizing the Justice Department against him, persecuting poor Donald. It's an internally consistent, paranoid view of the universe where up is down and down is up. But it's internally consistent. It's no problem. And that's what you encounter, which is so enraging and frightening in people who should know better, who have been fed this pablum and will spew it back to you. And it's got no factual basis for it. And when fact doesn't matter, that's what, you know, when
that's what's that's missing.
Rule of law is about fact. They call them the trier of fact. They do the best they can to determine what is true and what is not true. When you say that doesn't matter, you know, when Kelly Conway says, we have alternative facts, you know, we have the facts we want. It's impossible for a democracy to flourish, to survive, actually. And I mean, that's the threat. To me, it's not complicated. It's all the rule of law. No dictatorship is run by rule of law. They have corrupt judiciary that are controlled by the dictator. And that's what Trump says he wants to create. He's got his 2025 project. He's got everyone lined up. Stephen Miller, probably to be the czar of immigration and murder immigrants. Who knows? This is like Orwell.
Yeah. So with metta meditation, we need to calm ourselves and right. And like find ways to keep calming ourselves.
Yes.
And sending out positive energy to yourself when you're feeling a lot of anxiety, and to those relationships that aren't working, and to our country and to other countries and to those who are suffering. You feel so much better. I do this every day. It just helps me, you know, maintain my sense of hope and optimism about the future, recognizing, you know, the reality of where we are.
It's admirable. And it's you're working to preserve your better self. We all need to preserve our better selves right now. You know, that's our flotation device.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, that's a beautiful way to end our conversation. Okay. We both are feeling a little better. Yeah. Thank you so much. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you next time when I see you.
Expand your leadership skills and become more resilient and competent as a business owner? Do you want to bring more meaning to your relationships and more purpose to your business? Are you ready to take charge of how you innovate, create, and run your business? Our dual innovation leadership process will help you redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. We collaborate with you to do what will work for you as you evolve and change. We start with where you are, whether you are turning around a financial crisis, growing to the next level, or somewhere in between. We address your immediate needs, shore up business development gaps, expand relational literacy, and build upon your entrepreneurial leadership skill sets with a short-term results orientation and a long-term perspective. Start by subscribing to this podcast at wementor.com or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. If you are ready to hire a mentor, contact me at nancy@wementor.com. When we mentor, you create a better life and a more fulfilling future. As an entrepreneurial leader / innovator, as a competent business owner / practitioner, as a mentor / role model, and as a human being courageously living a meaningful life. As Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Get involved today. It's never too late to change your life and how you lead.